Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, January 17th, 2024. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Judge Windmill will continue to block Idaho's gender-affirming care felony law. Washington lawmaker wants legislature to keep state on standard time year-round. TC Energy was not open about methane compressor breakdown that led to natural gas shortage around the region over the deep freeze weekend. And Moscow Council approves plan to replace vandal-damaged mural on Jackson Street. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And you're tuned to KRFP Moscow Pullman and live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho. I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Avista Utilities officials have thanked residents of the region for conserving natural gas during the extremely cold weekend when there was a shortage of methane in local pipelines because a natural gas compressor owned by Avista's supplier, TC Energy, broke down. While Avista Energy Supply Director Kevin Holland says the utility has a broad range of methane suppliers, it must be moved through large pressurized pipelines to push it out to customers. Holland told the Spokesman Review TC Energy of Calgary, Alberta, never gave specifics about how their compressor station failed. It took 12 hours to fix the compressor station Saturday. The Spokesman Review reports it reached out to TC Energy for an interview Tuesday, but the company did not reply. Federal District Judge B. Lynn Windmill in Boise yesterday denied a request from Idaho Attorney General Raul Labrador to lift a block on enforcing Idaho's felony gender-affirming treatment law. House Bill 71, which the legislature passed last year, was set to go into effect January 1st, and Judge Windmill issued his initial block December 26th. The law would make it a felony for doctors to administer puberty blockers, hormones, and other gender-affirming care to minors. Violators could get 10 years in prison. Windmill wrote in his decision this week, the attorney general did not provide new evidence that he is likely to succeed in his appeal. Windmill wrote, the state is not harmed when the court enjoins an unconstitutional law. The ruling is in a case from American Civil Liberties Union attorneys, the REST Collective, and other groups on behalf of parents in Idaho who have transgender children who receive gender-affirming care. Windmill's block is expected to be in effect until the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals decides Labrador's appeal. In his December 26th ruling, Judge Windmill wrote, the risks associated with the treatments used in gender-affirming medical care are similar to risks associated with other types of health care families may seek for minors. Attorney General Labrador wrote in an email to the Idaho Press, I've witnessed the devastating consequences of drugs and procedures used on children with gender dysphoria, and it's a preventable tragedy. ACLU of Idaho Legal Director Paul Southwick wrote in an email, the ruling makes our state more equitable and protects the right of parents to make health care decisions that benefit their children. We are optimistic that the plaintiffs will continue to prevail in this case, and we celebrate every small victory as we move toward a final ruling.
The Idaho Coalition Against Sexual and Domestic Violence is taking part in a meeting with a U.S. health official this week to discuss the ways to make the state safer against gender-based violence. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Assistant Secretary of Health, Admiral Rachel Levine, will be in Boise on Friday for a roundtable as the state legislative session gets underway. Idaho lawmakers have restricted rights for transgender and gender-expansive people in recent sessions, including a bill passed last year that bans gender-affirming care for young people. Levine calls this a concerning development.
Like all Americans, transgender people need to be able to access care from their health care providers for any health challenge or any condition, as well as primary care and preventative care, but also gender-affirming care, and that's youth and adults.
Idaho is one of 22 states that has banned gender-affirming care for minors. Levine is touring the country to assess the mental and behavioral health of members of LGBTQIA+ communities. She is the first openly transgender official confirmed to an executive branch position. Levine says restricting health care for transgender people is harmful and unscientific.
There is certainly a compelling body of evidence established over a number of decades that transgender medicine is standard of care medicine. Transgender medicine is physical health care, but it is also mental health care, and in circumstances, it's literally suicide prevention care.
A host of attendees will be at the meeting, including representatives from the ACLU, City of Boise, health organizations, and local churches. For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Love's Kombucha is proud to support KRFP Radio Free Moscow. Love's Kombucha is a fun, lively, fermented probiotic tea that is craft brewed right here in Moscow. For more information, visit loveskombucha.com.
The Washington Secretary of State's office has validated enough signatures for a Let's Go Washington ballot measure to repeal the state's cap and trade program to make the November ballot. Initiative 2117 could overturn Washington's Climate Commitment Act, a two-year-old law which imposes yearly restrictions on greenhouse gas emissions on large emitters, such as oil refineries and energy manufacturers. Companies that release greenhouse gases are required to purchase allowances at auctions for every metric ton of pollution they release. Critics of the cap-and-trade system contend the program does not do what was intended. They say the policy is driving food and energy prices higher. Hedge fund manager and Let's Go Washington founder Brian Haywood said, "It has already taken a bite out of family budgets and put a heavy burden on communities just so politicians can distribute feel-good subsidies to their political friends and allies." According to the Washington State Standard, signature collectors gathered more than 400,000 signatures to get the measure on the ballot. The initiative must first go before lawmakers, who can adopt it as written. That will likely not happen since Democrats hold majorities in both chambers of the Washington legislature. Governor Jay Inslee said he's urging lawmakers to link the state's carbon market with those of California and Quebec. Inslee said this effort to repeal the Climate Commitment Act is not just a repeal of a financial instrument. It is a system to give people cleaner air, and if the cap is eliminated, the protection will be eliminated. The people who want to pass this initiative want to have the right to produce infinite carbon pollution. I fundamentally disagree with that, and people need to know that it is a threat.
Opponents of a new law that caps carbon in Washington state are waiting to see if their initiative to repeal it will appear before voters in November. Supporters say eliminating it could have a range of impacts on the state. The Climate Commitment Act was passed in 2021 and created a cap and invest program that reduces carbon from the state's largest emitters over time. In its first year of auctions in 2023, the program raised about $2 billion. The Nature Conservancy's David Mendoza says repealing the program would hit the state's transportation budget especially hard.
Inevitably, it would start affecting our ability to invest in roads and bridges that the rest of the transportation budget does, which will shrink the whole thing, and there will be less money for everything moving forward. So they could have some really devastating effects on what we're able to do for our state if the repeal occurs.
Investments from the program have been used to create fare-free bus transit for Washingtonians age 18 and under across the state, for example. Funds have also been used for electric school buses and EV chargers. However, opponents of the Climate Commitment Act say it's raising the cost of everything in Washington, especially gas. Mendoza says the price of gas is more complicated than that. He says lawmakers should make the source of gas prices and fluctuations clear.
That's what we're trying to do, is create some transparency so the public is better aware of the whole range of things that go into setting the price of gas, and can't demonize this legislation, which has really positive effects in a whole range of other ways.
Mendoza says the state has a goal to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by nearly half by 2030.
The Climate Commitment Act itself accounts for 26 million metric tons of reduction. If the Climate Commitment Act goes away, there's very little ways we can actually meet that goal.
Mendoza adds the program also invests in climate resilience to defend against the effects of climate change that communities are already experiencing in the state. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Republican State Senator Mike Patton of Spokane Valley has proposed a bill that would put Washington on standard time year-round. Current Washington law would put the state on daylight savings time year-round if, and only if, Congress passes a law that puts the nation on daylight savings time year-round. Under Patton's bill, standard time would be permanent if Congress does not act by November. According to the Spokesman Review, Patton told the Senate State Government and Elections Committee yesterday, "What we want to do is ditch the switch. We're tired of that switch, and I'd like to go to a new standard." Researchers say the risk of heart attack increases by 24% in the weeks after a switch to or from daylight savings time, and stroke rates increase by 8%, and fatal car accidents increase by 6%. If Patton's bill becomes law, it could start to get light as early as 3:11 a.m. in June in eastern Washington, and the sun could fully rise above the horizon as early as 3:52 a.m. On the summer solstice, the sun would set in eastern Washington at 7:51 p.m. instead of the current 8:51 p.m.
Advocates are making slow but steady progress to clean up a portion of the Columbia River that has been named an EPA Superfund site. Toxic pollution dumped by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers over 40 years at Bradford Island contaminated fish in the area, which are used as sustenance by the region's indigenous people. Rose Longoria is Regional Superfund Project Manager for the Yakima Nation. She says the contaminated site has been known for 2 decades, but only recently got Superfund listing.
If it wasn't for Yakima Nation, Bradford Island would not be on the national priorities list. And even now, I believe that if it wasn't for Yakima, no one else would be pushing as hard to get this site the attention that it needs.
There is a do not eat advisory for resident fish near Bradford Island. Organizations like Columbia Riverkeeper have created advisories in English and Spanish to let people know which fish are safe to harvest. Laura Shira is an environmental engineer with Yakima Nation Fisheries. She says resident fish near Bradford Island have the highest in the nation concentration of a toxic compound known as polychlorinated biphenyls, or PCBs.
There's all these fishing platforms on the Washington shoreline, on Goose Island, on the Oregon shoreline, and those are tribal fishing platforms, and they're within like a quarter to a third of a mile of what we know to be the worst contaminated area on that north shore of Bradford Island.
While it's been listed as a Superfund site, Yakima Nation and others in the region are still waiting on a concrete cleanup plan. Longoria says the PCB levels in resident fish make this an emergency and thinks the federal government should act quickly to correct the situation.
There are significant data gaps that need to be filled, but we need to do that as expeditiously as possible and determine the full nature and extent of contamination and determine the best way of cleaning up the site to protect human health and the environment.
For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The Latah Recovery Center has placed a free Narcan dispenser box outside the Moscow Food Co-op on East 5th Street in Moscow and another indoors at the Campus Christian Center on the University of Idaho campus. Narcan can be used in an emergency on a person going through a potentially fatal opioid overdose. Narcan is available in injectable form or as a nasal spray. The doses that the Latah Recovery Center is distributing are in nasal spray form. The drug, which can cost up to $50 for a box of 2 doses in a drugstore, will be available for free at the Latah Recovery Center locations. Latah Recovery Center Director Daryl Keim told the Daily News, "The reason we're doing this is we're hoping to keep the people alive long enough to enter into recovery." Keim said the box of Narcan will be in the Moscow Food Co-op parking lot for about 3 months and then move to a different location. He said, "My thought is people get used to seeing something if it's always in the same spot and they stop seeing it. So if they rotate it, different people will be walking by different locations." People can keep Narcan nasal spray handy in case they encounter someone overdosing. Keim said people who administer Narcan should still call 911 because 1 dose may not be enough to completely reverse the overdose. Narcan is also available at the Latah Recovery Center. The Moscow City Council advanced plans last night to replace the mural on the water building at the intersection of Jackson and A Streets, which a vandal destroyed by throwing white paint on it last year. The council approved a request for qualifications that artists can bid on. The city's insurance coverage will pay the cost of the repairs. The city will also hire a contractor to prepare the wall with primer for the new artwork. The council budgeted $31,850 for the entire project, including the prep and artist's expenses. That money will come from the city's insurance carrier. The previous mural was painted in June 2019. Moscow Arts Department manager Megan Cherry said the application process will open next month, and she said she hopes to have the new mural finished by the end of September.
If you drive by that building right now, what you'll see is that it has been blasted, so the paint has been removed from most of the areas. There's a little overspray on the windows. That will be removed before the installation of the new mural. And so that's part of the surface prep. We have a local painting contractor who will also do a primer coat. And then the artist will come in and install the mural. And then after that, that same painting contractor will come back in and apply that anti-graffiti clear coat. Artist eligibility. This has been something that we chatted with the Arts Commission and Council and with Legal pretty extensively. So the artists are 18 years of age or older. The piece that was the topic of a lot of conversation was that preference would be given to artists living in Latah County, Nez Perce County, or those who are Nez Perce or Coeur d'Alene tribal members. But then also there's that secondary preference for those from Assotin and Whitman County. And that's kind of in recognition that the arts ecosystem is broader than just the state lines or the borders of the city. And so it's hoping to give some preference to local folks. Another point that I wanted to make note of on this slide is that artist teams are eligible to apply. That's important because murals are often a team sport. But this is a way that folks who are interested in painting murals can learn from more experienced artists. So it's not to say that somebody who doesn't have experience with mural painting couldn't participate in this project. They might just participate as part of a team.
The Arts Commission says the theme for the project will revolve around the words play, celebration, and transformation. Again, Megan Cherry.
The Arts Commission provided three really key words that they felt fit this site and were important at this point for the Moscow community, and that's play, celebration, and transformation. And so they wanted the artists to really be thinking about those words as they are developing their thoughts for this mural design. And so that's kind of the primary point of reference for artists creatively with this project.
Cherry said they expect the mural will be around for 5 to 8 years. When that time is over, the Art Commission will reevaluate the theme. The Pullman City Council last night filled its open Ward 1 council seat by appointing Washington State University employee Trymaine Gaither at a special meeting of the council. The council voted unanimously for Gaither after selecting him from a field of 15 applicants. Gaither moved to Pullman from North Carolina in 2016. In 2019, Washington State University hired Gaither as a coordinator before he took the job of assistant to the provost for inclusive excellence in 2019. Gaither follows the Mindfulness Practitioner Program and is a trained mindfulness-based emotional and social intelligence coordinator. The program says it is a wisdom-based discipline which helps people create a profound self-awareness and personal development through a series of 23 lectures in a program called the Foundational Principles of Mindfulness. Gaither said, we can grow the sense of belonging in the community. The Daily News reports Gaither's selection came before a packed city council chambers where most of the seats were filled by supporting attendees and the 14 other candidates for the city council seat. The council took no other action last night. Other residents who applied for the position included Tony Poston, Rob Larson, Julian Matthews, Holly Greystone, Nicole Drumhiller, Richard Elgar, Benush Armani, Steve Hummel, Bobby Ryder, Rick Grunwald, Deb McNeil, Sean Weldon, Connor Welwo, and Dan Marr. Greystone and Marr were city council candidates in the November election. McNeil ran for mayor, losing to Francis Benjamin. If Gaither completes the necessary paperwork at the Whitman County Auditor's Office Elections Department, he could take the oath of office as early as today. He must fulfill the requirements with the state's Public Disclosure Commission and other essential training. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, the winter storm warning remains in effect for the Idaho Palouse until 10 p.m. tonight. Heavy snow, areas of blowing and drifting snow, additional snow accumulation up to 2 inches. Plan on slippery road conditions. Areas of blowing snow could significantly reduce visibility. The hazardous conditions will impact the Wednesday evening commute. Snow rates of near an inch an hour are possible. If you must travel, keep an extra flashlight, food, and water in your vehicle in case of emergency. Forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area is calling for 90% chance of snow tonight, mainly before 7 p.m., areas of blowing snow before 10 p.m., low 13, breezy, west winds 15 to 20, becoming northwest 5 to 10 after midnight. Winds could gust up to 30 miles per hour. Total nighttime snow accumulation less than 1 inch possible. 30% chance of snow tomorrow, mainly after 3 p.m., mostly cloudy, high 25. New snow accumulation less than an inch. Thursday night, 80% chance of snow, mainly after 10 p.m., temperature falling to 24 by 9 p.m., then rising to 28 during the remainder of the night. New snow accumulation 1 to 2 inches possible. On Friday, 80% chance of precipitation, snow and freezing rain before 10 a.m., then a chance of freezing rain before 1 p.m., then a chance of rain. Snow level 3,100 feet, rising to 5,900 feet in the afternoon, high 33, new snow accumulation less than half an inch. Current temperature 13 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for low-income or students. If you want to make a donation, you can go to the KRFP website. There's a drop-down box there that says Support KRFP. There you can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business supports community radio. You can also adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button. And once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Also on the KRFP website, you can stream KRFP and listen to archives of every show broadcast on KRFP in the last 2 weeks. I'm Lee Robartis. Jim Roach assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a good night. We'll have a commentary from Planet Nancy, and then that'll be followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. Lockdown Mosh Pit at 7:30. At 8:30, music begins in earnest with Grateful Dead Through the Decades with Arlene, and our weekly show, What's the Frequency, Kenneth? Our weekly newsical, 10 p.m. till 11. So stay tuned for more KRFP Moscow Pullman.
KRFP is supported by listeners like you and by Moscow Ale House, with something for everyone in the family. You can find Moscow Ale House at 226 West 6th Street or call 208-882-BREW. That's 208-882-2739.
The Wind, Season 4, broadcast on KRFP.
I know how it feels when you...
Tune in to Season 4 of The Wind with Phil Corbett.
Smoking marijuana, listening to Judas Priest, contemplating suicide.
I view the Satanic Panic as two different things that are connected.
Me and the devil was walking side by side.
I believe my granddad's at a crossroad in his life.
The Satanic Panic, The Crossroads, Subliminal Messaging, a new series from The Wind. Devil Music, coming soon.
At the heart of it, colonialism needed the devil because it needed to fill up those empty spaces because it wanted to take those empty spaces.
Mondays at 2 p.m. right here on KRFP Moscow Pullman.
If you talk to the average teenager of today and you ask them what it is about rock and roll music that they like, the first thing they'll say is the beat, the beat, the beat.
Rock music is nothing more than satanic cyanide.
James and Ray were chanting, do it, do it, do it. They did not even know where it came from.
Repeats Wednesday mornings at 12:30 and Saturday mornings at 2 a.m.
The Wind Season 4 debuts Monday, January 22nd at 2 p.m. Do you get your old from Z's new with